I also know that the reason she doesn't see them is her own damn business. Even though she told Garrett it was okay to confide in me about this sexual assault in her past, it feels inappropriate to bring it up. If she wanted to talk about it with me, she would. They're staying at the inn on Main, Dean answers. Anyway, this is the only time she can run today. As if on cue, Hannah appears on the front stoop, decked out in a baggy t-shirt and spandex pants that go to her knees. Her ponytail flops around as she hurries over to give me a hug. Logan, I feel like I haven't seen you in months. That's because you haven't. I tweak the end of her ponytail. How's your summer going?
Good. You?
I shrug. All right, I guess.
So you're coming running with us?
Apparently, I don't have a choice in the matter. I'm already wearing sneakers, track pants, and an old t-shirt, so I don't need to change. But I pop into the house to stash my wallet and keys before joining them outside again. Just in time to hear Hannah scolding Dean about his running attire.
Seriously, dude, put on a shirt.
Hey, you know what they say, Dean drawls. If you've got it, flaunt it.
No, I'm pretty sure they say put on a shirt when you go for a run, you cocky narcissist.
His jaw drops.
Narcissist? More like realist. Look at these abs, Wellesley. Actually, touch them. Seriously, it'll change your life.
She snorts.
What, you're too intimidated by all this masculine beauty?
He slaps a hand over his tight six-pack.
You know what?
She says sweetly.
I would love to touch your abs.
In the blink of an eye, Hannah scoots down and grabs something from the planter next to the garage. A handful of dirt. Which she proceeds to smear on him, leaving a line from his belly button to the top of his waistband. And since it's hot as hell outside, and Dean is already sweaty, the dirt cakes to his skin like a mud mask.
Ready?
She chirps. Dean glowers at her.
I know you think I'll go inside and wipe that off, but guess what? I won't. Oh, really? You're going to run through town looking like that?
She tips her head in challenge.
No way. You're far too vain.
I snicker, but I happen to know she's not giving Dean enough credit. As much as his ego probably hates that his pristine abs have been soiled, Dean also happens to be a stubborn-as-fuck hockey player who's not going to allow a tiny ballbuster like Hannah get to him.
Nuh-uh, baby doll. I'm wearing this dirt as a badge of honor.
He stares at her, gloating. She stares back, annoyed. I clear my throat. Are we running or what? They snap out of their stare down, and the three of us take off in a brisk pace down the sidewalk.
We usually run the same route, Dean tells me. Down to the park, hit the trail there, then come back the other way.
Knowing they've been running together often enough to have a route brings a strange pang of jealousy.
I miss my friends, damn it.
I hate how isolated I've been in Munson, with nobody to talk to but Jeff and my perpetually inebriated father. We've only been running for a few minutes when Hannah starts humming, softly at first, but eventually it turns into full-on singing. Her voice is beautiful, sweet and melodic, with a throaty pitch that Garrett says gives him goosebumps. As she sings Hozier's Take Me to Church, I can't help but turn to grin at Dean.
She sings when she's running, he says with a sigh. Seriously, she does it the whole time.
Garrett and I tried explaining that it messes with your breath control, but
I swear to God,
she interrupts,
if I have to hear one more lecture about my breath control, I will punch you, all of you. I like to sing when I run. Deal with it.
I actually don't mind it. Her voice is a nice soundtrack to the thuds of our sneakers pounding the pavement, even if her choice of songs is slightly depressing. When we reach the entrance of the park, I notice the roof of the gazebo peeking through the trees, and I'm suddenly reminded of the night at the water tower with Grace. She'd told me this was her childhood spot. My shoulders tense, almost as if I'm anticipating to find Grace in the gazebo, which is stupid because of course she's not. Holy shit, she is. I see a girl on the steps, a long braid, and disappointment surges through me. Wait, it's not Grace. It's a blonde in a green sundress,
and the afternoon sunlight catches in her golden braid as she bends her head to read the book in her lap. Then her head lifts, and holy shit again, because I was right the first time. It is her. I stumble to a stop, completely forgetting about Dean and Hannah, who keep running. From her perch on the steps, Grace looks in my direction, and although 30 or so yards separate us, I know she recognizes me. Our gazes lock, and a frown mars her lips. Shit. Maybe Dean's onto something. Maybe I shouldn't be wearing a shirt right now. Chicks are much more amenable when they're looking at a ripped chest, right? Jesus. And that's just sad, thinking the sight of my bare chest will make her forget everything that went down between us. Logan! Yo, what the hell? Keep up, bro! My friends have finally noticed I'm not with them, and they come jogging back. Hannah follows my gaze, then gasps. Oh, is that Grace? For a second, I'm surprised she knows her name, until I realize that Garrett must have told her. Shocker. Beside me, Dean squints at the gazebo to get a better look. Nah, that's not her. Your freshman is a brunette, and she doesn't have legs that go on, and fuck, those legs are hot. Excuse me, I think I'll go over there and introduce myself. I grab his arm before he can take another step. It's Grace, dumbass. She obviously dyed her hair, and if you looked at her face and not her legs, you'd see it. He squints again, and then his jaw drops. Shit, you're right. Grace lowers her gaze back to her book, but I know she's aware of my presence because her shoulders are stiffer than the posts at the gazebo's entrance. She's probably waiting for me to run off, but that's not going to happen. I'm not running away, not this time. You guys go on ahead, I say gruffly. I'll catch up, or I might just meet you back at the house. Dean continues to leer at Grace until Hannah finally shoves him to force him to follow her. As they head for the path, I move in the other direction, my heart beating faster and faster the closer I get. It's not only her hair color that's different, I realize. She's also wearing more makeup than I've ever seen her wear before. Smoky green eyeshadow that makes her eyes look bigger. Fuck, it's sexy. Especially combined with the freckles that no amount of makeup can cover up. My chest clenches as something occurs to me. She's wearing a dress. And makeup on a Thursday afternoon. Is she waiting for someone? My palms are clammy as I approach her. I can't take my eyes off her. Jesus, her legs really are phenomenal. Smooth and tanned and... crap, I'm imagining them wrapped around my waist, her heels digging into my ass as I fuck the hell out of her. I clear my throat. Hi. Hi, she answers. I can't for the life of me read her tone. It's not casual, not rude. It's neutral. I guess I can work with that. I. The nerves get the best of me, and I end up blurting the first thing that comes to mind. You didn't call me back. She meets my eyes. No, I didn't. Yeah, I don't blame you. I wish my goddamn track pants had pockets, because I'm experiencing that age-old problem actors have. What the fuck do I do with my hands? They're dangling at my sides, and I'm fighting hard not to fidget. Look, I know you probably don't want to hear a word I have to say, but can we talk? Please? Grace sighs. What's the point? I said everything I needed to say that night. It was a mistake. I nod in agreement. Yes, it was. It was a huge mistake, but not for the reason you think. Irritation clouds her features. She closes her book and stands up. I have to go. 5 minutes, I beg. Just give me 5 minutes. Despite her visible reluctance, she doesn't walk away, doesn't sit down either. But she's still standing in front of me, and 5 minutes in the life of a hockey player? More than enough time to score a few points. I'm sorry about how everything went down, I say quietly. I shouldn't have ended it like that. And I definitely shouldn't have let us get that close to having sex when I was so screwed up, even before I came over. But all that stuff I said about wanting someone else, I was wrong. I didn't realize until I got home that I was already with the person I wanted to be with. Zero reaction on her face. Zip. Nada. A part of me wonders if she's even listening to me, but I force myself to continue. The girl I told you about. She's my best friend's girlfriend. A flicker of surprise crosses her expression. So she is listening. I convinced myself I had a thing for her. But it turns out it wasn't really her I wanted. I wanted what she and Garrett have. A relationship. Grace eyes me dubiously.
Yeah. Sorry, but I don't really buy that.
It's true. My throat is tight with embarrassment. I was jealous of what they have. And I was stressing about other things too. Family stuff. And hockey. I know it sounds like I'm making excuses, but it's the truth. I wasn't in a good place. And I was too confused and bitter about my life to appreciate what I had. I really did like you. Do like you. I amend hastily. God, I feel like a frickin' preteen. I wish she'd offer some shred of encouragement, a hint of understanding. But her expression remains blank. I've been thinking about you all summer. I keep kicking myself for the way I acted, and wishing I could make it right.
There's nothing to make right. We barely know each other, Logan. We were just fooling around. And honestly, I'm not interested in starting that up again.
I don't want to fool around. I exhale in a rush. I want to take you out on a date. She looks amused. God damn it. Amused. As if I've just told her a humdinger of a joke. I mean it, I insist. Will you go on a date with me? Grace is quiet for a moment, then says,
No.
As disappointment clenches in my stomach, she tucks her book in her shoulder bag and takes a step away.
I have to go. My dad and I are going out for lunch soon, and he's waiting for me at home.
I'll walk you, I say instantly.
No thanks. I can make it there all by my lonesome.
She pauses.
It was nice seeing you again.
Oh, hell no. There's no way I'm letting it end this way, all cold and impersonal, as if we're nothing more than acquaintances who bumped into each other on the street. When I fall in step alongside her, she grumbles in annoyance.
What are you doing? I told you I don't need you to walk me home.
I'm not walking you home, I answer cheerfully. I happen to be going in that direction. She points to the trail.
Your friends went that way.
Yep, and I'm going this way. Her cheeks hollow as if she's grinding her teeth, and then she mumbles something under her breath. It sounds like,
The one day I forget to bring my iPod.
Perfect. That means she can't ignore me by listening to music. So you're having lunch with your dad? Is that why you're all dressed up? She doesn't answer, and promptly picks up her pace. I lengthen my strides to keep up. Hey, we're already walking in the same direction. No harm in passing the time by making conversation. She spares me a cursory glance.
I'm dressed up because my mother spent way too much money on this dress. And my paranoid brain thinks that if I don't wear it, she'll somehow be able to sense it, even though she's all the way in Paris.
Paris, huh? She responds in a grudging tone.
I spent the summer there.
So your mother lives in France. Does that mean your parents are divorced?
Yes.
Then she scowls at me.
Stop asking me questions.
No prob. Do you want to ask me some?
Nope.
Okie dokie. I'll keep being the question asker then.
Did you just say okie dokie?
Yep. Was that adorable enough to change your mind about that date? Her lips twitch, but the laugh I'm waiting for doesn't come. Instead, she falls silent again and walks even faster. We're on a street parallel to Hastings's downtown core, passing several quaint storefronts before the area goes from commercial to residential. I patiently wait for Grace to get tired of the silence and say something. But she's more stubborn than I thought. So what's with the hair? Not that I don't like the new color. It suits you.
Also, my mother's doing,
Grace mutters.
She decided I needed a makeover.
Well, you look great. I shoot her a sidelong look. Christ, she looks more than great. I've been walking with a semi since we left the park, unable to stop admiring the way her dress flutters around her thighs.
with each step she takes. We reach a stop sign, and she veers to the right, her pace quickening as we turn onto a wide street lined with towering oak trees. Damn it, her house must be close. One date, I urge softly. Please, Grace, give me a chance to show you I'm not a total dick. She gazes at me, incredulous. You humiliated me. 4 months worth of guilt slams into me. I know. I was ready to have sex with you, and you didn't just reject me. You told me you were using me as a distraction, so you wouldn't have to think about the person you actually wanted to have sex with. Her cheeks turn bright red. Why would I ever want to go out with you after that? She's right. There's absolutely no reason for her to give me another chance. My stomach hurts as she brushes past me. She heads for the front lawn of a pretty house with a white clapboard exterior and a wraparound porch, and I feel even queasier when I notice a gray-haired man on the porch. He's sitting on a white wicker chair, a newspaper on his lap as he watches us from behind a pair of wire-rimmed glasses. Shit. It's probably Grace's father. Groveling in front of an audience is bad enough, but doing it in front of her father? Fucking brutal. What about everything before that? I call out after her. She turns to face me. What? Before that night. I lower my voice when I catch up to her. When we went to the movies and the water tower. I know you liked me then. Grace releases a tired sounding breath. Yeah, I did. So let's focus on that, I say roughly. On the good parts. I fucked up, but I promise I'll make it up to you. I don't want anyone else. All I want is another chance. She doesn't answer, and an ache of desperation seizes my chest. At this point, I'd be thrilled to receive a yeah, sure from her. The silence wrecks me, chipping away at the confidence boost she gave me when she admitted to liking me before V-night. Sorry, but no, she says, and the last scrap of my confidence takes a nosedive. Look, if you want forgiveness, then sure, you've got it. That night was embarrassing as hell, but I had the whole summer to get over it. I don't hold grudges, okay? If we bump into each other on campus, I'm not going to run screaming in the other direction. Maybe we'll even grab a coffee one day. But I don't want to go out with you, at least not right now. Fuck. I really thought she'd say yes. Defeat crushes down on my chest, followed by a surge of hope. Because technically, she didn't say no. She said, not right now. I can absolutely work with that.
Chapter 19, Grace. It's the first semester of my sophomore year, which means I'm sophomore Grace now. Freshman Grace, God rest her soul, let her best friend make decisions for her and guys walk all over her, but sophomore Grace? She will do no such thing. She will not be Ramona's doormat or Logan's distraction. Nope. Sophomore Grace is the carefree 19-year-old who spent the summer gallivanting around France. Does it count as gallivanting when you do it with your mother? Sure it does, I assure myself. Gallivanting is gallivanting, no matter who you're with. Either way, a new year equals a new me. Or rather, an improved version of the old me. At the moment, new old me is making the bed in my new dorm room and desperately hoping that my roommate won't be a bitch, a psycho, or a psycho bitch. I tried convincing the woman in the housing office to give me a single, but those are reserved for upperclassmen, so I'm stuck doubling up with someone named Daisy. When my father helped me move my stuff to Hartford House yesterday, Daisy's side of the room had been empty, but I got back from lunch today to find boxes and suitcases all over the place. So now, I'm waiting for her to show up, because I want to get the awkward nice-to-meet-yous out of the way. The fact that I'm getting a new roommate brings an unwelcome pang of sorrow. I haven't spoken to Ramona since April when I informed her I was done. Maybe we'll sit down and talk one of these days, but right now, I'm looking forward to starting my sophomore year without her. As exasperating as my mom's ambush makeovers were, she taught me several valuable lessons this summer. First and foremost, be confident. Second, be spontaneous. Third, the only opinion that matters is your own. I plan on incorporating mom's advice into my sophomore plan, which involves having fun, making new friends, and going out on dates. Oh, and not thinking about John Logan. That's a critical component in the plan because ever since I ran into him at the park last week, I haven't been able to get him off my mind. I'm proud of myself for standing my ground, though. I was surprisingly anger-free when I saw him, but that doesn't mean I'm willing to trust him again. Besides, I'm sophomore Grace now. I'm not easily dazzled anymore. If Logan is serious about us going out, I need a lot more than a gruff apology and a crooked grin. He'll have to up his game, that's for sure. The door swings open, and my back tenses as I turn to face my new roomie for the first time. She is adorable. Except I'm fairly certain that not only is adorable the last word other people would use to describe her, but that if she heard me say it, she'd kick my ass. Nevertheless, it's the first adjective that comes to mind because she's a tiny pixie of a girl. Well, if pixies had black hair with pink bangs, a multitude of piercings, and wore cute yellow sundresses paired with Doc Martens. Hi, she says cheerfully. So you're Grace, huh? Yep. And you're Daisy? She grins as she closes the door behind her. I know, the name doesn't suit me. I think when they named me, my parents thought I'd grow up to be a Southern belle like my mom, but much to their chagrin, they got this. She gestures to herself from head to toe, then shrugs. I do hear a trace of the South in her voice, though, a very subtle drawl that adds to her easygoing attitude. I like her already. I hope you don't mind all the boxes. I flew in from Atlanta early this morning and haven't had a chance to unpack yet. No worries. Do you need help unpacking? I offer. Gratitude fills her eyes. I'd love that. But it'll have to wait until this evening. I just popped in to grab my iPad and now I'm heading to the station. The station? Campus radio station, she explains. I host an indie rock show once a week and produce two other ones. I'm a broadcasting and comm major. Oh, that's cool. I was actually going to check if there are any available student jobs there, I confess. I was thinking of joining the school paper, but the guy I spoke to said their freelancer list is a mile long. And I don't have an athletic or musical bone in my body, so sports and music is out, and all the other clubs I looked into sound insanely boring. Or plain nuts. Did you know the environmental activist group on campus spends their weekends chaining themselves up to trees to protest all the townhouse developments that are being built in Hastings? And last year, some chick got struck by lightning because she refused to unchain herself during a thunderstorm. I stop abruptly, feeling my cheeks heat up. For the sake of full disclosure, you should know I'm a babbler. Daisy bursts out laughing. Noted. You might find it endearing one day, I say helpfully. Don't worry. I'm on board with the babbling, as long as you promise to be on board with my night terrors. Seriously, it's brutal. I wake up screaming my lungs out and... Kidding, Grace. Her laughter is out of control now. God, you should have seen the look on your face. I promise, no night terrors. But I have been told I talk in my sleep sometimes. I snicker. That's fine. I'll babble during the waking hours. You'll babble in the sleeping hours. Match made in heaven. Daisy unzips one of the suitcases on her bed and fishes around inside until she pulls out a bright pink iPad case. She tucks it into the khaki green canvas bag that's slung over her shoulder and glances at me. Hey, if you're serious about the extracurricular thing, we actually are looking for people to help out at the station. There are a couple of open hosting slots, but I don't think you'll want them. It's the graveyard shift. And if on-air stuff isn't your style, we also need a producer for one of the talk shows. What would I have to do? It's a call-in advice show. Monday evenings and Friday afternoons. You'd be screening calls, doing research for the hosts if they plan on talking about a specific topic, that kind of stuff. She gives me an earnest look. You know what? Why don't you come with me right now? I'll introduce you to Morris, the station manager, and you guys can talk. I think it over, but it doesn't take long to reach a decision. Daisy seems cool, and it wouldn't hurt to talk to her station manager. Besides, I wanted to make new friends, right? Might as well start now.
Logan. It's good to be home. Not to rip off Dorothy or anything, but there really is no place like it. The irony doesn't escape me, though. Technically, the house I stayed in all summer and just left last night is home, but I was never half as happy in Munson as I am here in Hastings, in the house I've only been renting for 2 years. My first morning back, and I'm in such a terrific mood that I start the day off right by blasting Nappy Roots in the kitchen while I scarf down some cereal. The loud strains of Good Day draw the others from their bedrooms, and Garrett is the first to appear, clad in boxers and rubbing his eyes. "Morning, sunshine," he mumbles. "Please tell me you made some coffee." I point to the counter. "Go nuts." He pours himself a cup and plops down on one of the stools. "Did cartoon chipmunks dress you this morning?" he grumbles. "You're scarily chipper, and you're scarily grumpy. Smile, dude. It's our favorite day of the year, remember?" AKA the first day of open tryouts for freshmen who weren't recruited out of high school. The upperclassmen crash every year to scope out the prospective talent, because sadly, losing talented players is a fact of life when you play Brier hockey. Guys graduate, drop out, go pro. And since the team roster changes each year, we're always eager to check out the incoming freshmen. Hopefully, there'll be some gems on the ice today, because the team's in a world of trouble. We lost three of our best forwards, Birdie and Nico, who graduated, and Connor, who signed with the Kings. Our defense lost Rogers to Chicago, and two of our senior defensemen to graduation, which means Dean and I will likely be playing longer shifts, at least until some of the younger D-men get their shit together. But the biggest hit we took? Losing our goalie. Kenny Sims was magic. Pure fucking magic in that crease. He was a freshman when coach named him a starter, despite the fact that two senior goalies were already on the roster. The guy was that good. Now that he's graduated, the fate of our team rests in the hands of a senior named Patrick, unless this freshman crop somehow produces another Kenny Sims. "We should have bribed Sims's profs to fail him," Garrett says with a sigh. And I realize I'm not the only one worrying about Sims's departure. "We'll be okay," I answer, rather unconvincingly. "No, we won't," comes Dean's voice, and then he enters the kitchen and heads for the coffee maker. "I doubt we'll even make it to the postseason. Not without Kenny." "Ye of little faith," Tucker chides, waltzing through the doorway. "Holy shit," I blurt out. "You shaved the beard." I glare at Garrett. "Why didn't you tell me? I would have thrown us a party." Dean snickers. "You mean, thrown him a party?" "No, he means us," Garrett replies for me. "We're the ones who had to stare at that ghastly thing for half a year." I smack Tuck's ass as he breezes past my stool. "Welcome back, babyface." "Fuck off," he grumbles. "Yep, it's good to be home." An hour later, I rest my forearms on my knees, clasp my hands together, and lean forward to analyze the slap shot of a stocky freshman with curly red hair poking out the back of his helmet. "That one's not bad," I remark. "Who? Mullet Man?" Hollis calls from the end of the bleacher row we've congregated at. "Nah, he hasn't impressed me yet." Down on the ice, coach is running a simple skate and shoot drill with the freshman hopefuls, who are decked out in either black or silver practice jerseys. And yeah, I know it's only day one, but so far I'm not too impressed either.
Two at a time, the guys need to skate past the blue line, take a shot at net, then turn up the outer lane and skate hard through the neutral zone, where one of the ACs releases a pass that the skaters need to connect with. It's not complicated at all, yet I'm seeing way too many dropped passes for my liking. The goalies are decent, at least. They're not exuding any of that Sims magic, but they stop more pucks than they let in, which is promising. Beside me, Garrett whistles softly. Hell yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The next skater in line takes off, and sweet mother of God, he's fast. A dizzying streak of black against a backdrop of white as he tears toward the net. And the shot he releases, perfectly timed, perfectly executed, perfectly perfect. He could fluke out, Tucker warns. But 20 minutes later, the kid is still rocking the practice like Ozzy fucking Osbourne in a packed amphitheater. Who is that? Garrett demands. Hollis peeks over from the far seat. No clue. Pierre, a Canadian who joined us last season, leans in from the row behind us and taps Garrett's shoulder. Hunter something or other? He's a rich kid from Connecticut. Big star on his prep school team. If he's that good, then why wasn't he recruited? Tucker asks dubiously. What's he doing at open tryouts? Half the colleges in the country tried recruiting him, Pierre answers. But apparently he wanted to quit hockey. Coach twisted his arm and convinced him to practice today. But even if he makes the cut, there's a good chance he won't want to join the team. Oh, he's joining the team, Dean declares. I don't care if I have to suck his dick to get him to agree to it. Laughter breaks out all around him. Sucking dick now, are we? I ask pleasantly. An evil gleam lights his eyes. You know what? I won't just suck it, he says slowly. I'll suck him off. You know, give him an orgasm. The other guys exchange mystified looks, but Dean's mocking look tells me exactly where he's going with this. Jackass. I'm not sure if you all know this, but an orgasm is the point of completion in the pleasure process. Dean gives me an innocent smile. Men and women achieve it in different ways. For example, when a woman reaches completion, she might moan or gasp or, what the fuck are you talking about? Garrett interrupts. Mr. Innocent bats his baby greens. I thought you guys might need a refresher course in orgasms. I think we're good, Tuck says with a snort. You sure? Nobody has any questions? He's grinning at me as he voices the question, and when the guys turn their attention back to the ice, I jab him in the ribs. Hard. Geez, John, I'm trying to be helpful. You could learn a lot from me. No woman has ever been able to resist my natural charm. You know who else had natural charm? I retort. Ted Bundy. Dean dons a blank look. Who? The serial killer. Oh, Jesus. I've jumped on the Bundy bandwagon. I'm turning into Grace. Great. And now I'm thinking about Grace. I've been forcing myself not to since she shot me down last week. But no matter how hard I try, I can't get her out of my head. Is it an ego thing? I keep asking myself whether it is. Because I honestly can't remember the last time I obsessed this hard over a chick. Am I only interested in her because she's not interested in me? I like to think I'm not that arrogant. But I can't deny the rejection stings. I want another chance. I want to show her I'm not some heartless asshole who is just using her for a little B&B, but I have no idea how to change her mind. Flowers, maybe? A big public groveling? Hey, asshats! We bolt to our feet when Coach Jensen's commanding voice snaps toward the bleachers. Our fearless leader, the only Briar faculty member who can get away with calling students asshats, glares at us from the ice. Is there a reason your lazy asses are up in those seats when you should all be in the weight room? He booms. Quit stalking my practice. Then he turns to scowl at the trio of freshmen who are snickering behind their gloves. What are you ladies laughing at? Hustle! The players speed forward as if the ice behind them is cracking to pieces. Up in the stands, the guys and I hustle just as fast.
Chapter 20, Grace. As the first week of the semester comes to an end, I finally hear from Ramona again. And after months of ignoring her, I finally pick up the phone. It's time to see her in person. I'm not particularly enthusiastic about meeting for coffee, but I can't freeze her out forever. There's too much history between us, too many good memories I can't pretend aren't there. But this meetup is for clearing the air purposes only, I assure myself as I walk across campus. We're not going to be best buds again. I'm not sure we can be after what she did. It's not about her sext to Logan. It's about what the sext indicates, her blatant disregard for my feelings and her cold-hearted dismissal of our friendship. A real friend doesn't proposition the guy who hurt her best friend. A real friend puts her own selfish desires aside and offers her support. 30 minutes after we get off the phone, I enter the coffee hut and join Ramona at a table near the window. Hi. She greets me shyly, fearfully almost. She looks exactly the same as the last time I saw her. Black hair loose around her shoulders, curvy body wrapped in tight clothing. When she notices my hair, her eyes widen. You went blonde, she squeaks. Yeah, my mom talked me into it. I sink into the chair across from hers. A part of me is tempted to hug her, but I fight the urge. That's for you. She gestures to one of the coffees on the table. I just got here, so it's still hot. Thanks. I curl both hands around the cup, the heat of the styrofoam rippling into my palms. I just hiked across campus in 80-degree weather, but suddenly I feel cold, nervous. An awkward silence stretches between us. Grace, her throat dips with a visible gulp. I'm sorry. I sigh. I know. A sliver of hope peeks through the cloud of despair in her eyes. Does that mean you forgive me? No, it means I know you're sorry. I pop open the plastic lid and take a sip of the coffee, then make a face. She forgot the sugar. It shouldn't bother me as much as it does, and yet it's simply another sign that my best friend is attuned to nothing about me. Not my feelings, not even my coffee preferences. I grab two sugar packets from the little plastic tray, tear them open, and dump their contents into the cup. As I use the skinny wooden stick to stir the hot liquid, I watch Ramona's expression change from slightly hopeful to decidedly upset. I'm a shitty friend, she whispers. I offer no argument. I shouldn't have sent him that message. I don't even know why I did. She stops abruptly, shame reddening her cheeks. No, I do know why. Because I'm a jealous, insecure bitch. Again, no argument there. You really don't get it, do you? She blurts out when I remain silent. Everything comes so easy for you. You get straight A's without even trying. You land the hottest guy on campus without... Easy? I interrupt an edge to my voice. Yeah, I have the grades, but that's because I study my ass off. And guys, remember high school, Ramona? It's not like I had a booming social calendar back then. Or now, for that matter. Because you're as insecure as I am. You let your nerves get the best of you, but even when you're all nervous and babbly, people still like you. They like you from the moment they meet you. That doesn't happen to me. She bites her lower lip. I have to work so hard for it. The only reason anyone even noticed me in high school was because I was the bad girl. I smoked weed and dressed slutty, and guys knew that if they asked me out, they'd make it to at least second base. You didn't exactly try to discourage that. No, because I liked the attention. Her teeth dig harder into her lip. I didn't care if it was good attention or bad attention. I just liked being noticed, and that makes me really fucking pathetic, huh? Sorrow climbs up my spine, or maybe it's pity. Ramona is the most confident person I've ever met, and hearing her rag on herself like this makes me want to cry. You're not pathetic. Well, I'm not a good friend either, she says woodenly. I was so fucking jealous of you, Grace. I've always been the one who goes out with the hotties and asks for your advice, and suddenly you're talking to me about having sex with John frickin' Logan, and I was so consumed with jealousy, I wanted to scream. And when the Logan thing exploded in your face, guilt flashes in her eyes. It made me feel relieved. And kind of smug, I guess. And then I got it into my head that if I was the one hooking up with him, there's no way he would have rejected me. And yeah, so I messaged him. Jesus, that last thing I said about her not being pathetic? Strike that from the record. I was stupid and selfish, and I'm so sorry, Gracie. She implores me with her eyes. Can you forgive me? Can we please start over? I take a long sip of coffee, eyeing her over the rim of my cup. Then I set it down and say, I can't do that right now. Distress lines her forehead. Why not? Because I think we need a break. We've spent every waking hour together since the first grade, Ramona. Frustration clenches inside me. But we're in university now. We should be branching out and forming connections with new people. And honestly, I can't do that when you're around. We can do it together, she protests. No, we can't. The only friends I made last year were Jess and Maya, and I don't even like them. I just need space, okay? I'm not saying we're never going to talk again. You were a huge part of my life for so long, and I don't know if I want to throw all that away over a stupid text message. But I also can't go back to the way things used to be. She goes quiet, chewing so hard on her lip, I'm surprised it doesn't start spurting blood. I can tell she wants to argue, to force a reconciliation, push her friendship on me. But for once in her life, Ramona defers to me. Can we still, I don't know, text? Have coffee sometime? She sounds like a little girl who's just been told the cherished family dog has been taken to a farm. After a beat, I nod. I'm okay with that, starting off slowly. Her hopeful expression returns in full force. How about coffee, then? We can meet here again. Despite my lingering resistance, I offer another nod. Relief floods her face. You won't regret this, I promise you. I'm not going to take you for granted ever again. I'll believe it when I see it. For now, I've made all the inroads I'm willing to make with her. We exchange a brief and incredibly awkward hug, and then she leaves, saying she needs to get to class. I'm too sad to move, so I simply sit there, absently stirring the stick in my coffee. I feel as if I've just broken up with someone. In a sense, I did. But I meant every word. I do need a break from her. She was holding me back last year. Freshman Grace was a confined bird that only got to soar when Ramona decided to let her out of the cage. Well, sophomore Grace is going to fly all over the place. The sadness in my chest disperses, replaced by a twinge of excitement. I already feel like I'm soaring. I love my new roommate. I'm enjoying my classes so far, and I'm looking forward to my new job at the campus radio station. Morris, the junior who runs it, gave me the producing job on the spot when Daisy and I came in at the beginning of the week, And as of next Monday, I'll be working on an advice show hosted by a frat boy sorority girl team who I've been warned are dumb as posts. Daisy's words, not mine. Also, that Morris guy seems pretty fucking cool. And he's ridiculously hot. That delicious factoid certainly didn't escape me when I met with him. The bell over the door dings loudly and my head involuntarily swivels toward it, then immediately swivels back. I hunch over, hoping my hair will shield my face from view of the newcomers. The newcomers being Logan and four of his friends. Crap. Maybe he won't notice me. Maybe I can sneak out before he does. I don't want to draw any attention to myself, so I don't get up right away. Logan and his buddies approach the order counter, and every gaze in the coffee house hangs on their every move. Something about these guys changes the air in the room on a molecular level. They're larger than life, and not just because they're all tall, strapping hockey players. It's the confidence with which they walk, the good-natured insults they toss back and forth, the easy grins they flash to people. I know I should be skulking off, but I can't look away. It's almost criminal how attractive he is. Granted, I'm only looking at the back of his head, but it's a very sexy back of the head, and it's so easy to pick him out as an athlete. The long limbs and toned muscles beneath his cargo pants and snug t-shirt create a drool-worthy package that my fingers itch to unwrap. Ugh, I need to drag my head out of the gutter. Lusting over him is too close to liking him, and I'm not ready to open that door yet, if ever. But common sense comes too late, because Logan is now moving away from the counter and marching in my direction. Hey, gorgeous. He slides in the seat across from me and places a chocolate chip muffin on the table. I got you a muffin. Damn it. I guess he'd noticed me right when he'd walked in. Why? I ask in suspicion and without saying hi. 'Cause I wanted to get you something and you already have coffee. Ergo, muffin. I raise one eyebrow. Are you trying to buy your way into my good graces? Yep. And excellent pun, by the way. I wasn't punning. My name just happens to be a homonym. His blue eyes gleam as he downright smolders at me.
I love it when you talk homonyms to me.
Uh-huh. I choke back a laugh. I appreciate the gesture, but do you really think a muffin is going to wow me?
Don't worry. I'll buy you an entire meal when we're out on our date.
He winks. Anything you want off the menu. Damn him and his seductive winking powers.
Speaking of that, when should we do it?
I eye him warily. Do what?
Go out.
His head tilts in a thoughtful pose.
I'm free tonight, or any night, really. My schedule is wide open.
God, this guy is incorrigible and too damn gorgeous for his own good. His chiseled jaws covered with scruff as if he hasn't shaved in a few days. And my tongue tingles with the urge to lick a path along the strong line of his chin. This is the first time I've ever wanted to lick a guy's stubble. What is the matter with me? Congrats on your wide-open schedule, I grumble, but I'm not going out with you. Logan grins.
Tonight or in general?
Both. We're interrupted by the arrival of one of his friends.
Ready?
The guy asks Logan as he flips the top of his coffee cup.
Go away, G, I'm wooing.
His friend snickers, then turns to me.
Hey, I'm Garrett.
Right, as if I don't know who he is. Garrett Graham is a legend at this school, for fuck's sake. He's also incredibly good-looking, the kind of good-looking that brings a blush to my cheeks despite the fact I'm not even interested in the guy. I'm Grace, I answer politely.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
He edges away, a barely restrained smile on his lips.
I'll wait outside so my boy can keep, wooing.
No need, we're all done here. I scrape my chair back and hop to my feet.
We most certainly are not,
Logan mutters. Amused, Garrett glances from me to Logan.
I took a mandatory conflict resolution seminar back in high school. Do you guys need a mediator?
I pick up my coffee. Well, the stenographer who follows me around is on a lunch break, but I can catch you up no problem. Logan asked me out, and I solved the conflict by respectfully declining. There, I did all the work for you.
Garrett laughs loud enough to attract the attention of everyone around us, including the three hockey players who wander over from the counter. What's so funny?
Dean asks curiously. He notices me and offers a delighted smile.
Grace, long time. I'm loving the hair.
I'm surprised he even remembers my name. Thanks. I inch closer to the door. I've got to go. See you around, Logan. And, you too, Logan's friends. I'm halfway out the door when I hear him call.
You forgot your muffin.
No, I didn't, I answer without turning around. Male laughter tickles my spine as the door closes behind me.
Here's what you're gonna do. Pick up a bottle of wine, invite him over to your place, and make sure some old school usher is playing when he walks in. Then you take off all your clothes and, you know what, baby girl?
Pace Dawson drawls into the microphone on Friday afternoon.
Forget the wine and usher. Just be naked when he shows up, and there's no doubt in my mind that he'll be ready to go to the bone zone.
Pace's co-host, Evelyn Winthrop, pipes up in agreement. Naked never fails. Guys like it when you're naked. In the privacy of the producer booth, I do my best not to gag. Through the glass that separates my booth from the main one, I see Pace and Evelyn grinning at each other as if they've just dispensed Dr. Phil-worthy advice to the freshman who'd called in for seduction tips. It's my first week at the station, and the second segment of Whatcha Need that I've heard Pace and Evelyn host. So far, I'm not blown away by the caliber of wisdom they're handing out, but according to Daisy, the bi-weekly advice show gets more listeners than all the other student shows combined. All right, next caller, Evelyn announces, which is my cue to take the caller off hold and put him on the air. One of my other tasks is screening the calls to ensure the people calling in have real questions and or aren't cuckoo bananas.
Hey, caller, Pace says, tell us what you need.
The sophomore who's been waiting on the line wastes no time getting down to business.
Pace, my man, he greets the host. I wanted to hear your thoughts about manscaping.
In his plush seat, the rugby shirt-wearing frat boy snorts.
Dude, totally against it. Downstairs grooming is for chicks and sissies.
Evelyn speaks up as if she's leaving a comment on a blog post.
Strongly disagree.
As the hosts start bickering about the pros and cons of male pubic hair, I choke down laughter and concentrate on monitoring the time. Each caller is allowed 5 minutes tops. This one still has four left in the allotted five. My gaze drifts to the other window in the booth, and I watch as Morris organizes a stack of CDs in front of the massive wall of music. Shelf after shelf holds hundreds and hundreds of albums, which is a strange sight to behold. I can't remember the last time I listened to an actual CD. I figured they were as obsolete as VCRs and cassette tapes by now. But the station is old school, and so is Morris. He's already confessed to having a record player and a rare Underwood typewriter in his dorm room. And he's also rocking a retro fashion sense I find sexy as hell. Part hipster, part newsy, part punk, part... I could go on forever, actually. There's a little bit of everything in the guy's style. It suits his quirky personality, though. I've only known him a week, but I'm quickly discovering that Morris can't go an hour without making a dry quip, a dirty joke, or at least one groan-worthy pun. I'm also fairly certain he has a thing for me, if his constant flirting and readily available compliments are any indication. I think I'd be open to it if he asked me out, but every time I consider it, a part of me raises a protest and encourages me to go out with Logan instead. I won't lie, that muffin stunt had been charming. Presumptuous, sure, but adorable enough that I couldn't stop smiling during the entire walk back to my dorm. But that doesn't mean I'm giving him a second chance. I shift my gaze back to the main booth and force myself to concentrate on the radio show. For the next 35 minutes, I fight hard not to laugh as I listen to quite possibly the two dumbest people on the planet give advice. Seriously, if their combined IQ is in the double digits, I'll eat my hat. Proverbial hat, of course, since I can't for the life of me pull off hats. My head refuses to look good in them. Once the hosts sign off, I switch on the rap mix Morris gave me to use as a placeholder while the next DJ sets up. His name is Kamal, and he's a rabid hip-hop fan who plays obscure tracks that almost no one has ever heard of, myself included. When I leave the booth and step into the main room, Morris wanders over with a lopsided grin. "Were you listening to that manscaping call?" How could I not? It was one of the most ridiculous debates I've ever heard. I pause, then grin back. But I did enjoy when Evelyn said that if she wanted to see foliage, she'd take up hiking or gardening. He laughs and rakes a hand through his hair, drawing my gaze to those unruly dark strands. He's got the most interesting appearance. Honeyed skin, jet black hair, golden brown eyes. I honestly have no idea what his background is. Asian, maybe? Mixed with... no clue. Like his fashion style, his features are a collection of unique elements that I find incredibly attractive. "You're staring at me." His lips twitch with humor. "Is there something in my teeth?" "No." My cheeks warm up. "I was just wondering about your ethnic background." "Sorry, you don't have to answer that if you don't want to." He looks highly amused by the question. "My face is like a melting pot of ethnic goodness, huh? Don't worry, I get asked that all the time. My family is like the United Frickin' Nations. My mother was born in Zambia. Her mom was black. Her dad was a white doctor who ran a clinic there. And my father is half Japanese, half Italian."
"Wow, that is a lot of culture."
"What about you?"
"Not as interesting. The Ivers family practically founded Massachusetts, and we've got some Scottish and Irish roots, I think." A high-pitched giggle sounds from behind us, and we turn to see Pace and Evelyn making out against the wall. On my first day here, I asked Evelyn how long they've been dating, and she looked at me as if I'd just gotten off a spaceship, then informed me that they only make out at the station because radio is so boring. As Morris and I exchange amused looks, Pace catches sight of us and grins over Evelyn's slender shoulder. "Yo, Morrison," he calls out, even as the blonde continues to nibble on his neck.
"Kegger, it's Sigma tonight. Fat Ted has a new game he wants you to try to beat. You should come too, Gretchen."
Even if I'd wanted to correct him, Pace is no longer paying attention to us because his tongue is in Evelyn's mouth again. "Why does he call you Morrison, and who on earth is Fat Ted?" I inquire in a dry voice. Morris chuckles.
"He calls me Morrison because he thinks that's my name, no matter how many times I tell him it's not. And Fat Ted is one of his frat brothers. He's a hardcore gamer, and we sort of have this competition going on.
Whenever one of us gets a new game and beats it, we pass it off to the other one and see if they could do it better. Ted's awesome. You'll meet him at the party tonight.
I have to laugh. Who says Gretchen is even going to that party?
Morrison says so. He's wanted to ask Gretchen out since he met her.
I blush at the impish smile he shoots me. So this will be a date? I ask slowly.
If you want it to be. If not, then it'll be two friends going to a party together. Morrison and Gretchen taking on the world.
He cocks a brow.
Take your pick. Date or friend hang. The choice is yours.
Logan's face flashes in my head, making me hesitate. Except then it makes me mad because Logan shouldn't be part of the equation. We're not together. We weren't together before. And Morris is a really cool guy.
What do you say, Gretch?
His mischievous voice summons a laugh from me. I meet his twinkling dark eyes and say, let's make it a date.
Chapter 21. Logan. I'm not in the mood to go to a kegger tonight, but Garrett informs me that if he has to go, then I have to go. Because, and I quote, best friends suffer together or not at all. I politely pointed out that we could always pick the not at all option, which earned me a dark scowl and a menacing, you're going finger point. At least he's the designated driver tonight, so I can slug back a shot or two. But no hooking up. Nope. I have a strict new rule about party hookups, and I plan on sticking to it. No more meaningless BJs in bathrooms or hurried fucks in bedrooms that don't belong to me. John Logan is officially in relationship mode. I don't understand why you're in a fraternity when you clearly hate being a member, Hannah remarks. She's in the back seat of Garrett's Jeep, because I don't believe in the automatic shotgun for girlfriends rule, and therefore called shotgun before she could. Dean and Tucker caught a ride with Hollis earlier, so the three of us are meeting them at the Sigma house. I'm with her about the frat thing. Garrett is a member of Sigma Tau, yet he doesn't live in the house, attend the meetings, or chill with a single one of his brothers. His only contribution to the frat is making appearances at the parties, and even then, he barely stays more than an hour. I'm a legacy, he answers, his gray eyes focused on the dark road. They were obligated to let me rush, and my father forced me to pledge. Wait, so you went through the whole hazing process? She asks. Nope. They wanted me so bad, you know, because I come from hockey royalty, that they pretty much gave me a free pass during pledge week. They'd yell real loud when the other pledges were around, order me to clean the bathroom with a toothbrush or some shit, and then one of them would pull me aside and whisper, get out of here, kid. Go get some sleep. Hannah bursts out laughing. Wow, corruption in the Greek system. I'm shocked, I tell you. Garrett turns onto Greek Row, which is jam-packed with cars. We end up parking several houses down from Sigma and walking to the massive frat house, where Dean, Tucker, and Hollis wait for us on the lawn, passing around a joint. Dean hands it to me, and I take a deep hit, filling my lungs, then exhaling a cloud into the warm night air. Guess who just showed up? Dean murmurs. Your freshman. Well, I guess she'd be your sophomore now. My pulse quickens. Grace is here? He nods. Yeah, but she's, with someone. What the fuck? With who? And it damn well not be some drunken Sigma oaf whose only goal is to get into her pants. I had no intention of throwing down tonight, but if some slimy mofo so much as looks at Grace wrong, he'll be leaving this party on a stretcher. But Dean is quick to ease my worries. Hipster type, he says. Definitely not Sigma. I'm suddenly eager to get inside, so I herd my friends toward the front door, which gets me a bemused look from Garrett. I take it we're wooing again tonight, he says wryly. Damn right we are. The house is more crowded than our arena during a home game.
and I don't spot Grace when I scan the sea of faces. The deafening dubstep blasting from the speakers makes it impossible to carry on a conversation. So I gesture to Garrett that I'm going to look for Grace, and then I'm swallowed up by the mob as I venture deeper into the living room. Several attractive girls smile as I walk past them, but they're not even on my radar. Grace is nowhere to be found. I wonder if maybe Dean made the whole thing up, Grace on a date at a frat party. It does sound kind of far-fetched, the more I think about it. I pop into the kitchen and search the large group gathered around the granite work island. No Grace. But one of the chicks sipping a Corona near the sink separates herself from the pack and slinks my way. Logan, she purrs, wrapping her fingers around my bare biceps as she leans in closer. Hey, Piper, I mutter, and I'm tempted to shove her away before her lips can graze my cheek. Piper Stevens is undeniably beautiful, but that Twitter smear campaign she started against Grace has not been forgotten. The kiss lands on my cheek, and although she pulls away afterward, she's still pressed up against me, her hand stuck to my arm like hockey tape. So it's our senior year, she says. Know what that means? I can't even pretend to be interested. I'm busy peering at the kitchen doorway in search of Grace. What? It means our time is running out. Warm lips brush the side of my throat, and I flinch and take a step away. She frowns. You've been playing hard to get for 3 years, she accuses. Isn't it about time you gave us what we wanted? A snort slips out before I can stop it. What you want, Piper? I've told you 100 times I'm not interested. Her red lipsticked mouth forms a pout. Think about how good it will be. All this pent-up animosity between us. She stands on her tiptoes and whispers in my ear, her dark hair tickling my chin. The sex would be fucking explosive. I uncurl her fingers from my arm. Tempting, I lie, but I'll pass. Hey, if you're hard up, we've got some new meat on the team. This kid Hunter might be right up your alley. Her eyes blaze.
Fuck you. Don't try to pimp me out to your teammates.
I'm not pimping you out, babe. Simply giving you a heads up. See you around, Piper. I can feel her glaring daggers into my back as I leave the kitchen, but I don't give a fuck. I'm sick of her constant come-ons and total disregard for the fact that I'm not fucking interested. I wander through the main floor again, checking every room twice before giving up. Maybe she's outside. It's crazy humid tonight, so the party is both an indoor and outdoor affair, which means it's time to widen my perimeter. I decide to start out front. When I step into the parlor, triumph shoots through me, because I catch a glimpse of Grace on the winding staircase. She's alone, and my pulse accelerates as I admit.